Good morning. We thank you for tuning in to our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. We want to remind you of our meeting place and service times this morning quickly before we get into the program. We meet at the building located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue each Sunday morning. Of course, we meet there on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock for Bible classes, 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings for worship services, and 6 o'clock Sunday evenings for worship. We also have Bible study again on Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock. And we hope you'll come and meet with us. We hope you will come for the purpose of Bible study. That's what we do when we meet together. Of course, there are other items of worship in which we engage, but we are focused upon trying to follow the Scriptures, to use the Scriptures only for our guide of faith and practice. So we hope you will be interested in that, and it gives us an opportunity to just meet you. And if you have any specific questions about what we stand for, what it is, what we practice in our worship, what our concepts are when it comes to organization of the church and work of the church, we'll simply try to direct you to Bible passages that speak exactly to that. And hopefully we'll come to a common and like understanding of the Scriptures on that. I was thinking about something that I heard someone say one time. We were having a discussion about a controversy that was going on among brethren, and this particular preacher that I knew had been in a group, visiting with a group of preachers, and one very prominent, well-known preacher in the group said something interesting, and the man reported this back to me, and I was a little bit shocked on one level, maybe on another not too surprised. Sometimes people that get to be very popular often are because they have compromised, sadly, and that's what had happened in this case. But the man made the statement, what difference does it make what you believe on that anyway? What difference does it make what you believe on that anyway? And I always thought that was an interesting observation, because some people might not be quite so brave, so bold as to just say that, but may actually believe that. And it's quite obvious to me that a lot of people in religion believe that, whether they're prepared to say it that way or not, to state it that plainly or not. What difference does it make what you believe? And that's a good, that's a good question. What difference does it make? What difference does it make? And of course, there are some answers to that question that we need to consider. But I was thinking, while thinking about this question that this popular preacher, well-known preacher, had raised, and it really wasn't a question, it was an observation on his part. It was explaining why he did not take a definite stand on that controversy. But it hit me, there are some examples in the Bible of where people might have been thinking that before they made catastrophic mistakes. And I want us to look at a few examples of that, see if we can insert this question in some of these old stories. I thought first of Nadab and Abihu. Might they have asked this question in regard to their offering of strange fire before the Lord? Leviticus 10:1 says, "And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not." The next verse says, "And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord." Had they had opportunity, might they have made that argument? Asked that question? Well, now wait a minute, what difference does it make where we obtain the fire for our censers to be able to burn the incense? What difference would it make where we got it, where it came from? Well, the difference would be that the Bible speaks to the source of the fire. Over in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 12, that we know from that verse that they were to obtain the fire from off of the coals of the altar of burnt offering, where there was a perpetual fire burning. That's the difference that it makes. So people need to be very careful about it. It may seem insignificant. It may seem that it doesn't matter, but the difference is the difference between either doing what God says or not, or believing what God says or not believing. That's the difference. That's what we need to be very careful to consider. And I'm afraid a lot of people are not thinking that way when they say, well, what difference does it make what you believe on that or what you do on that anyway? You know, it's amazing how many examples I thought of we could go through. But I want to talk about some plain and obvious ones and then make some applications of this. Over in 1 Chronicles chapter 13. You remember that it became time for David and the Jews to retrieve the Ark of the Covenant that had been captured. To retrieve the Ark of the Covenant, and they determined to go to Kiriath-Jearim to retrieve it. In verse 6 of 1 Chronicles chapter 13. And it says that they carried the Ark of God in a new cart out of the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio drove the cart. David and all Israel played before the Lord with all their might, with singing, with harps, psalteries, with timbrels and cymbals, with trumpets. And when they came to the threshing floor of Kedon, Uzzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he smote him because he put his hand to the ark, and there he died before the Lord. Here's another death. You ever wondered about this? What difference did it make how they transported the ark? Some of our own brethren might be willing to make that argument. What difference does it... Well, I'll tell you the difference it made. If you go back to Exodus chapter 25, you see some details regarding this. Number one, and there are two errors made that are discussed in 1 Chronicles chapter 13 regarding the transporting of the Ark of the Covenant. Two mistakes, or not just mistakes, but two sins, two errors. The errors resulted in a fatality. God executed a man because of what? Well, they were just thinking, what difference does it make? Number one, what difference does it make how you transport it? Well, what instructions were given back in Exodus 25 regarding the transportation of the Ark of the Covenant? Well, it was fashioned in a way that it had the mode of transport taken into consideration. It was fashioned with rings, four rings, situated in the four corners of the box. And the priests were to slide poles through those rings, and the priest were to transport it, carrying it by those poles. That's how they were to transport the Ark of the Covenant. Those instructions were specific. You might say, well, surely God's only concern was that the ark be transported. No, that wasn't God's only concern. He had a couple of concerns. He had a concern about how it was transported, not merely that it was transported, and he had a concern about who touched it. Uzzah was not qualified to touch the Ark of the Covenant. But as a result of it having been put on this wagon, you might call it, cart, as a result of it being transported that way, the oxen hit a rough place in the ground, a threshing floor, hit a rough place, and what happened? The oxen stumbled, shook the cart, And so the Ark of the Covenant was at risk of falling off of the cart, or the cart maybe even turning over. And we visualize this as we read it, and we think in terms of a man just instinctively reacting. Uzzah may have instinctively reacted. One thing you wouldn't want to happen was for the Ark of the Covenant, that fancy box that held the stone tablets. You know, there had already been one set of stone tablets broken. God made another set, or had Moses make another set, and that's the set that is in this box. And you can think of just the absolute tragedy of that. And what did Uzzah do? He put forth his hand to steady the ark. He put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. And as soon as he did that, as soon as he touched it, God smote him. And it says he died. So he was stricken with death as a result of that. A man might have argued, well, what difference would it make whether or not Uzzah touched the cart that the ark was on, or touched the ark? What difference would that make? Well, he wasn't qualified. He wasn't authorized. So this goes back to, what did God say on the subject? You may notice in each of these cases, we could also make the point that any decision on the part of a man to substitute something different, whether we're talking about Nadab and Abihu, or we're talking about Uzzah, any attempt on their part to substitute or to do something different, and maybe even contemplating, well, you know, in the long run, what difference would it make whether we did it this way or not, constituted presumption. Constituted the sin of presumption. Presumption is where, in religion, is where men simply assume that they will be okay in implementing their ideas, in proceeding along the lines of their own opinions or their own views regarding something. That's what we're reading about there. That's what we're talking about when you think about presumption, the sin of presumption. David prayed to God that he keep back his servant from presumptuous sins in Psalm 19, if I remember correctly, at the end of it. We need to think that way. We need to think about the danger of the sin of presumption. But anyway, they were thinking what? What difference would it make? What difference would it make if we do this? You know, Saul fell into this same trap. King Saul did the same thing. You have in the book of 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter, 1 Samuel chapter 13, and we'll look at chapter 15. In chapter 13, you remember that the soldiers had been divided up between Saul and Jonathan, his son Jonathan. 2,000 were with Saul in Gibeah, Saul in Michmash, in Mount Bethel, and then you had 1,000 with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. So they had divided some forces. And you may read those numbers there and think, boy, they had 3,000 soldiers there. Yeah, but when Jonathan attacked a garrison of the Philistines, and it made the Philistines very angry, they reacted. And look at the numbers now in verse 5 of 1 Samuel chapter 13. They reacted, they gathered together 30,000, 30,000, not just 30,000 of just chariots and their soldiers. And then they had 6,000 horsemen. And then they had regular soldiers, infantrymen, that were basically beyond numbering. They were described as being like the sand on the seashore. In other words, this was a great multitude of people. A sea of people is camped ready to attack. And we're told the reaction on the part of the Israeli military here. They, of course, were just dismayed. They were terrified. It says the people were distressed. Verse 6 says they hid themselves in caves and thickets and rocks and high places and pits. Many of them deserted. They went over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. And so it's trouble. Now, you know, I've often kind of wondered, well, I wonder how many departed, how many went AWOL here. We are told that just in a few verses later that Saul had 600 men with him. In other words, 600 left. 600 left. Seems to be implied that at least at one point it was just Jonathan and his armor bearer at about this time on his side. And we do read about some tremendous exploits and bravery a little later in chapter 14 on the part of Jonathan. So we want to give credit here where credit is due, but look at what Saul did. Saul saw that the people were trembling, and many had departed, and they were terrified and scattered, and he thought, I'm going to have to do something. Now, the plan was that Samuel was to be there in 7 days. He was to be there at a certain time, but he had been delayed. It says he tarried 7 days, according to the set time that Samuel had appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal. That's verse 8. So look at what Saul does. King Saul. Not priest Saul. Not priest Saul, but King Saul. What did he do? Some of you may remember this story. Well, he said, bring me the sacrifice. Bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. That's verse 9 of 1 Samuel 13. Now, you might be thinking, well, given the dire circumstances here, given that the people were scattered and distressed and terrified and hiding and leaving, going AWOL and all, something had to be done. You might argue that. And so you might argue, what difference would it make, you know, who did this? Sure, he's waiting on Samuel, but Samuel couldn't make it, so why not just go ahead and have Saul do this? Well, that's kind of how people think in religion. That's exactly how Saul thought in 1 Samuel chapter 13, exactly. And so he offered the burnt offering. It came to pass, verse 10, the next verse, as soon as he had made an end to the offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Samuel went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you came not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. I forced myself. How many times do people think that way in religion today? First of all, the thing is, you know, well, what difference does it make how we do that? What difference does it make what we do? That thought. And then people say, well, it just looked like, you know, this other thing is not working. It pleased God, we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. But sometimes people will say, you know, it seems like the preaching is just not doing it. We're going to have to appeal to people using some other motivation. We're going to have to motivate them with food, fun, frolic. We're going to have to appeal to them using entertainment and recreation. And I always think of John 6 when I think of that, when Jesus condemned certain disciples for following him, not because they saw the miracles, but because they ate the food and were filled. I always think of that passage, John 6, 26 and 27 in through there. And that's exactly the mentality of many people today. And people say, well, we're just, you know, I realize that we don't have authority to spend church money on entertainment and recreation. Some people will say, I realize there's no example of that. The apostles and the first century Christians never did it. But You know, we're just going to have to buckle down and force ourselves. And after all, what difference does it make anyway? Well, that's how people think. That's how too many religious people think. Every time, friends, in every example of disobedience in the Old Testament, in every example, people were punished. You know, sometimes there were peripheral implications of one man's disobedience where other people died. And so we need to think through the consequences of this type of thinking. Saul did exactly the same thing again in two chapters later. 1 Samuel chapter 15, but there's a different aspect of this emphasized here, so we'll take a look at 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel 15, we read about God reminding Saul of what Amalek did to Israel when they were coming up out of the land of Egypt. Almost wish I had time to read this whole chapter, but of course time would fail us to be able to do that. So he told Saul, what I want you to do is go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. Spare them not. Slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass, and camel and donkey. Slay them all. Well, that's what you read. That's what God told Saul to do. So, you know, it looks like Saul is going to do what he's supposed to do. He calls together his foot soldiers and military men in verse 4 and makes his military planning. And all of a sudden, you start reading, Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until you come down to Shur, that is over against Egypt. This swath of country there. He took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul, now look at verse 9. So you think about verses 7 and 9. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen, of the fatlings, of the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I thought God said utterly destroy Amalek, all that they have. Spare none of them. Spare not human or animal. I thought that's what the instructions were. So, what did Saul do? Saul disobeyed. You know, Saul could have made the argument that since these other things could be used by the Jews of that time, by the military, or, you know, we think in terms of the spoils of war, and since in other instances, you know, Jericho was an exception to the spoiling rule, but in other instances, you've seen God allow them to keep all the good stuff, right? And you might think, well, there's some precedent for this. The problem is God was specific to Saul. People will say, what difference does it make, even in cases where God has specified what we're to do? Now, I want you to think of the real crime in this. I often preach lessons on Bible authority and talk about these things because it's so neglected today in religion. But I want you to think about the attitude of a human who is prepared to do that. What are we actually doing? We're doing exactly, when we do that, when we think that way, we're doing what Jesus told the Pharisees they were wrong for in Matthew chapter 15 and in Mark 7, setting aside the law of God. We are, again, guilty of presumption. We presume upon a thing. We presume that we know as much about the best way to do this as does God. That's, of course, where the real crimes begin to be committed. We assume ourselves to be God. You know, we read about that mentality back in Genesis chapter 3. That's exactly what Satan told Eve. He said, no, you know, God, when Eve quoted the law of God to Satan, the serpent at that time, there in the garden, and telling him, you know, what God had said about eating the fruit of the trees, you remember that she did it, she got it right. They were not to eat of the fruit of the tree, in the tree in the middle of the garden, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. She got that correct. But Satan said, you shall not surely die. And that's how people think. And Satan said, no, but God knows that you will be as gods, and your minds will be open. You will be as gods, knowing good and evil. And so that's exactly the driver behind this. People tend sort of to elevate themselves to the level of being God, being like God, to be able to know on their own right from wrong. And then people proceed to do things that are sinful and wrong. Humans just are not capable of being the arbiter in these situations. We must do what God tells us to do. So what happened as a result of Samuel's sin and his denial to his refusal to take personal responsibility for what happened, blamed it on the people. He said, no, the people spared Agag and the best of the flocks. No, Saul, that was you. He was doing what we call passing the buck. And this passage shows that we are individually responsible to God when God gives us instructions. We cannot blame that upon other people. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, a little later, it says, Samuel said to, when he came to rebuke Saul for what he had done, he said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? In other words, let's assume for a minute that you had a really good idea about using these things as sacrifices to God. You know, it seemed like a good idea. What difference would it make, right? Let's assume that. Well, you're still wrong, because God does not have as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord. In other words, the sacrifices are meaningless if you don't obey God. Religious people today need to remember that. All of the services, all of the sacrifices, all of the doing things, all of the programs and church programs and compromises and sacrifices that you make of your time, all of those things are worthless if you don't obey God. We must get things in their proper order. We must first do the will of God. We need to pay attention to what God tells us in order to even know what work is a good work, what program is a good program, which ones are authorized, which ones are acceptable. That's something else people need to stop and think about. Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. He goes on and says, for rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. The consequences were great. We've seen the consequence be just direct, what they call kill action. If we were speaking of military action, some covert action or operation, it would be a direct kill action. In the Bible, it was a direct kill action, taken in these cases by God in situations where someone might have been able to say, wait a minute, what difference does it make anyway how we do that? So friends, in the minute I have left here, think in terms of the work of the church, the worship of the church. Do we get to just make up worship services and do what we think seems like a good way to glorify God? Or should we respect what the Scriptures authorize? Think in terms of the use of mechanical instruments of music and worship. People just think this is okay. Well, upon what basis? Upon what basis? Some might try to go to the Old Testament to justify that, but we're not under the Old Testament, and it's a very quick study to conclude that we're not. It doesn't take a lot of time to figure that out. We would lose Christ as high priest, according to Hebrews 7, if we were under the Old Testament today. Then we're all doomed and damned to hell. So we can't be under the Old Testament. But anyway, we need to think in terms of those things and not be thinking in terms of what difference does it make. Our time is up today. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in for our study next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.